Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. On May 19th of 1964, William P. McFarland, then product marketing manager for the Campbell Soup Company, sent a typed letter to artist Andy Warhol. The letter reads, "Dear Mr. Warhol, I have followed your career for some time. Your work has evoked a great deal of interest here at Campbell Soup Company for obvious reasons. At one time, I had hoped to be able to acquire one of your Campbell Soup label paintings, but I am afraid you have gotten much too expensive for me." The letter, which was accompanied by several cases of Campbell's tomato soup, is one of dozens featured in the new, perfectly titled coffee table volume, Letters of Note, an eclectic collection of correspondence deserving of a wider audience. Also featured are letters by Charles Darwin, Mick Jagger, Ludwig von Beethoven, Elvis Presley, Benjamin Franklin, and many, many more than we have time to mention. All of them lovingly reproduced, complete with the original smudges, creases, and ink stains. The collection was compiled by Sean Usher, who joins us now. Hello, Sean.
Hello.
Now, before we dive into some of the details, do you have one or two favorite letters that you think best represents this collection?
It's like choosing a favorite child.
but I guess you can't do that.
I try not to. I do have a favorite job application letter. Oh. I used to be a copywriter when I first started this project.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because there are parallels. It's a letter written by Robert Pirosh, who at the time, many years ago, was a copywriter who wanted to become a screenwriter in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote a job application letter and sent it to all the Hollywood producers and directors he could find addresses for. It's a beautiful standard form job application letter, and it netted him an interview with quite a few movie studios, one of which was MGM, and it got him a job with MGM, and he went on to win an Oscar for his Battlefield script with Groucho Marx. But the letter itself is just the perfect application letter. It's like essentially him listing all his favourite words, and then at the end saying, I mean, they're beautiful, beautiful words. It's a lovely letter to read. And at the end of it, he says, "I still like words. Can I have a few with you?" And that one just resonated with me.
So that got you started. What was it about this communication between two people that's kind of intimate? You know, you weren't meant to read that letter. That got you started.
Well, I used to work as a copywriter, as I said. And the reason I got into it was one of my clients was a stationery retailer, so they had stationery shops. I needed to write an interesting article for them for their website. The only thing, kind of tenuous link I could think of, this was after writing many, many articles for them over the years, was famous letters. So I went to the local library, had a look at all these dusty old books full of these amazing letters from people like Mark Twain, and was instantly hooked and spent the next couple of days just with my head buried in these books. I went to the local museum and I was just blown away. And I thought, rather than, you know, write a single article about these letters, I should maybe start a blog. Literally within something like 3 days, I had the website up and running, and it took off really quickly.
And some of them must be priceless. A lot of from historical figures, Mary Stuart writing to her sister about being, she's about to be executed. A letter from Jack the Ripper, sort of taunting the official who's after him. Are they priceless? Can you just copy them?
Oh, some of them do. It depends on their age. Sometimes, you know, if they're over a certain amount of years old, depending on the country in which they exist, then they're free to use their public domain. But a lot of them aren't in public domain. So I've spent the last 4 years contacting literally hundreds of people to get their permission to reprint these letters. But as you were talking about priceless, there's a letter in there from Francis Crick, who co-discovered the structure of DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And just after he discovered the structure, before alerting the public, he wrote an amazing letter to his son.
March 19th, 1953. "My dear Michael, Jim Watson and I have probably made a most important discovery. We have built a model for the structure of deoxyribonucleic acid, read it carefully, called DNA for short. You may remember that the genes of the chromosomes, which carry the hereditary factor..."
It's just the most incredible letter, you know, a hugely important, historically important letter. And it went up for sale last year at Christie's Auction House, and it sold for something like £5 million. And it's
Whoa.
The most expensive letter ever sold at auction.
"We think we have found the basic copying mechanism by which life comes from life. You can understand that we are very excited. Read this carefully so you understand it. When you come home, we'll show you the model. Lots of love, Daddy.
There's an element here of secret history, you know, these small, important, emotional details that get left out of official history books. I'm thinking of the letter from the freed slave Jernan Anderson to his former master, or from the British explorer Robert Scott, who on an expedition to the South Pole gone terribly wrong wrote a letter to his wife, which he addressed to my widow. Is that what you're seeking out? These
That's
kind
exactly
of drama?
What I'm seeking out. Yeah, yeah. If a letter moves me and brings me close to tears, then I'll put it on the website and maybe in the book. But it is those really kind of emotional moments that I'm looking for. They really are first person kind of views of historical events that much of the time. And it's far more interesting and accessible way to learn about these historical moments, to read these first-person accounts.
Yeah, because you're getting a glimpse into something that has a sender and a recipient in mind.
Indeed.
You know, what is it about letters that let us in a way that other, even novels, don't necessarily?
When you sit down to write a letter, well, for me anyway, when I sit down to write a letter, I'm in a completely different frame of mind than when I send an email or a Facebook message or a tweet to someone. I really open up. I'm far more focused on the job at hand. I'm willing to talk about things I wouldn't want to talk about by email for some reason. I think it's more about the focus. When I'm writing an email to someone, I've usually got a few tabs open on the computer and I'm flicking backwards and forwards, and it takes me, you know, a couple of hours to write a long email. But when you're sitting down to the typewriter and you're writing a letter to someone, you have to be so focused to get it right, you know, just to physically get the letter right, that it really puts you in a different frame of mind, and it's a far more considered form of communication. And that's what we are slowly, well, quickly now, losing, just for the sake of brevity.
Any examples of something that has an emotional resonance that just stuck with you?
Yeah, there's one that always gets me, and it's from an quite a surprising source. It's from Iggy Pop, to a young fan. Have you read this one?
I don't know. You know, that's the one thing about this book. You dip in and out, but I still haven't read them all.
Right. Well, 3 years ago, a lady wrote to me and she said, "I was once sent a letter by Iggy Pop. Would you like to see it?" And I said, "Yeah, of course I would." And she sent me this letter. And when she was 15, back in 1995, she was having a terrible time. Her parents were splitting up. There were bailiffs on the doorstep. She didn't know where to turn. She was getting depressed. And she was a huge fan of Iggy Pop's. And on his latest album, on the inlay, he printed his address with a little note saying, "You know, if you want to get in touch with me, just write me a letter and I'll get back to as many as I can." So she wrote to him, told him about her troubles and her terrible family life. And he wrote back this really lovely, generous, very, very personal handwritten letter to her in this kind of scrawled handwriting, which gives it just so much charm. And it was just the most beautiful letter, and it really changed her life. And she said it really kind of put me on the straight and narrow from that point, and it saved me. Shall I read some of that out?
Yes, but keep in mind that you can't swear on.
I was going to miss that out. Yeah. okay. Well, it goes like this. It's quite a brief letter. So it says, "Dear Lawrence, thank you for your gorgeous and charming letter. You brighten up my dim life. I read the whole thing, dear, of course. I'd love to see you in your black dress and your white socks too. But most of all, I want to see you take a deep breath and do whatever you must to survive and find something to be that you can love. You're obviously a bright chick with a big heart too. And I want to wish you a belated, happy, happy, happy 21st birthday and happy spirit. I was very miserable and fighting hard on my 21st birthday too. People booed me on the stage and I was staying in someone's house and I was scared. It's been a long road since then, but pressure never ends in this life. Perforation problems, by the way, means to me also the holes that will always exist in any story we try to make of our lives. So hang on, my love, and grow big and strong and take your hits and keep going. All my love to a really beautiful girl. That's you, Lawrence. Iggy Pop."
Oh, Iggy Pop.
It's amazing. I never thought he was a bad person, but to see the amount of effort he went you know, went to get this letter to a troubled young fan, which just really blew me away. And that's really, really stuck with me.
And I'm looking at it now in the book, and you reproduced it. It looks like it's torn out of a, you know, sort of wire-bound notebook.
Which just gives it even more charm. You know, if it had been typed out really neatly, I don't think it would have been quite as impressive. I am a passenger.
I'm speaking with Sean Usher. He's curator of the blog Letters of Note, where he collects a diverse selection of letters to and from famous and unknown individuals. He recently compiled a collection of correspondence into a beautiful volume, also called Letters of Note. Well, let's talk about penmanship, because I see his, which sounds, you know, it sort of like begins a little stiff and then just sprawls out. Often we know so much about these historical figures in the collection. I'm thinking of Benjamin Franklin or Queen Elizabeth II, and yet sometimes seeing their handwriting adds something to the perception of them. Anybody whose handwriting really surprised you?
Mark Twain's, but then there's a letter in there that he wrote to a bogus medicine salesman. And he wrote this letter basically telling him to get lost because he'd lost his son and his daughter and his wife. So this medicine salesman wrote to him and said, I can, you know, cure all your problems with this magical elixir. So Mark Twain was furious, and he handwrote this draft of a letter that's in the book, and you can see his handwriting. And you can see he was furious because the letters are just kind of flying off the page. And he basically, as I said, told him to get lost. I love it when you can see the emotion in people's handwriting. The Queen's was quite surprising. I always expected the Queen's writing to be incredibly neat and elegant, but it isn't. I don't know why I thought that. Well, just because it's the Queen, I suppose.
She's giving the recipe for drop scones to President Dwight David Eisenhower, as promised.
So Eisenhower had been to Balmoral and stayed with the Queen, with his wife. And the Queen, apparently, I hope this is true, had made him some drop scones, her own personal recipe, and he loved them so much that he asked for the recipe. And then a few months later, she finally sent it. So you can see the handwritten letter, and you can see the actual recipe that was sent.
Which also notes that you have to beat them pretty vigorously, and I'm just trying to imagine the Queen vigorously beating batter.
It's a lovely thought, isn't it? You wouldn't get that anywhere else. And I actually wrote, because it's the first letter in the book, so just before the launch of the book, the launch party, I wrote to the Queen and I said, "This, you know, your drop scone letter is a real gem, and it's such a great way to open the book. I'd love you to come to the launch party. Would you like to come? Maybe we could clear some space and you could have a table where you could make these drop scones and present them to everyone." And she didn't write back to me personally, but the lady in waiting did and said the Queen's busy that day. She said she wishes you the best with your book and hopes you have a lovely launch party. But that was on Buckingham Palace letterhead. That was a lovely letter.
There are a number of bureaucratic misses in the collection. So have you benefited from many governments' habits of archiving everything in triplicate?
Yes, thank goodness. Yeah, there must be about a fifth of the letters in there are from national archives. Mm-hmm. There's a memo written. It's a really chilling memo written to Nixon's chief of staff by a speechwriter, in which he writes a speech to be read out by Nixon should Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin not return from the moon. Mm. And it really is a bone-chilling speech that would have been read out. And then afterwards there's instructions to contact the widows-to-be.
To H.R. Haldeman, from Bill Sapphire, July 18, 1969. In event of moon disaster. Fate has ordained that the men who went to the moon to explore in peace will stay on the moon to rest in peace. These brave men, Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin, know that there is no hope for their recovery. But they also know that there is hope for mankind in their sacrifice. These two men are laying down their lives in mankind's most noble goal, the search for truth and understanding. They will be mourned by their families and friends. They will be mourned by their nation. They will be mourned by the people of the world. they will be mourned by a Mother Earth that dared send two of her sons into the unknown. Prior to the president's statement, the president should telephone each of the widows-to-be. After the president's statement, at the point when NASA ends communication with the men, a clergyman should adopt the same procedure as a burial at sea, commending their souls to the deepest of the deep, concluding with the Lord's Prayer.
One of the things that I did notice was that letters can connect ordinary people with historical giants that normally seem so out of reach, you know, between children and artists who inspire mm-hmm. them, or in one funny case, an exchange between a little boy and the architect Frank Lloyd Wright. What can you tell us about that one?
Frank Lloyd Wright, one of the great, I think he was voted the greatest ever architect in history. He designed a house for a rich family in America. And then the little boy, years and years later, decided that he wanted a doghouse designed in the same style as the house for his beloved dog. So he wrote to Frank Lloyd Wright and said, please could you... It was a beautiful handwritten letter by this little kid. Please could you design a house for my dog to match our lovely house that you designed. Frank Lloyd Wright, who must have been one of the busiest architects on earth, wrote back and said, I'm a bit busy at the moment, but write again in a few months. So the little boy did. He wrote back, and then Frank Lloyd Wright agreed to it. So in the book you can see the first letter and Frank Lloyd Wright's reply, and then there's some plans that he made for the doghouse, and there's a photo of the eventual doghouse. And it's just the most lovely exchange. The sting in the tail is that the dog hated the house when it was eventually built. So
he would not be the only inhabitant of a Frank Lloyd Wright house.
He may not have
liked it.
He slept outside the doghouse.
I love that the kid says he's 4 years old, or in dog, 28 years.
Yes. It's just such a lovely story.
Well, okay, so you've opened up this whole world of wonder and charm and sort of intimacy between people. What else do you see in these letters that you don't find in an email or a text message or a tweet?
It's the physicality as well. Being able to look at someone's handwriting, the style of paper they've chosen, even that interests me. Looking at the letterhead, looking at the envelope, even the postmark, there's so much to, just as a visual thing, as a visual object, there's so much to be excited by a letter. As soon as a letter comes through the postbox and it's not a bill, as soon as it hits the doormat, I'm kind of excited already. Mm. And then you open it and it's just kind of knowing that someone's gone to the effort to write this letter for you. Just, again, it puts you in a different frame of mind than when you just, click on your inbox on Gmail.
Sean Usher, what a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much.
Sean Usher curated the new volume Letters of Note, an eclectic collection of correspondence deserving of a wider audience. Now, we do have a link to the blog that began it all, where you can see some of the letters that we talked about here and many, many more. That's at wordofmouthradio.org.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home. My baby just wrote me a letter.
Handwritten letters are not the only thing to fall victim to the digital age. The typewriter is now an endangered species. When Word of Mouth continues, the story of a poet with a typewriter and a simple business model. Name a price, pick a subject, get a poem. That's after the break. This is NHPR.
Letter said she couldn't live without me.